Alan Kring Productions presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, Academic Lectures in Business and Economics. This is Business Finance, FIL 240, Section 3 for Spring Semester 2019. Lecture 5, delivered on February 4, 2019. The title of this lecture is Cash Flow.
Today, cash flow. The financial statements of a company are written, that you see presented, are written in accordance with generally accepted accounting standards, and they are recording what has already happened. And what is their recording according by rules that they are given? Most specifically, everything that you see is going to be historical, pretty much, in a financial statement. Everything you see is going to, most likely, if it's a cost, it's going to have a receipt of some kind, an electronic or paper document saying this money was spent. I was just finishing my own company's taxes, and if I don't have a receipt, I can't put it in there, even though there are costs that I incur as a corporation, my company incurs. There are costs that cripple my corporation. I can't put those in there. But there are costs that don't even exist that I can put in there. That all having been said, let me pull up some financial statements here and just look at something. Let's do CAT. Now, there are a lot of places you can go to get financial statements. Really? How did that happen? CAT. Go ahead, do it again. Okay, here. Well, hey, well, gee, I could just stay here on Yahoo Finance and hit financials, and there are, oh, that's all I need to do is go to Yahoo or go to Google to get financial statements. Don't do that. You're in the world of documents that are authoritative and primary. You don't go to secondary sources. These financials will come from the same place as financials of that are at other secondary sites, Google sites, Wall Street Journal, and all that. They could be right, but they might not be right, and there might be flaws in the algorithm that pulls them from the primary source. So there is really not a good reason as college-educated people to go to these places for financial statements. You go to the SEC, and I told you the story of the SEC the last time we were together, and I do appreciate that that seems like it was a long, long time ago, given the vacation, extra vacation day. But you'll be expected to know this, to go to the SEC in your homework. You have to go get these statements. And in the exams, you may very well have to go to these statements to get some information to bring with you to the exam. So you might as well start here. The EDGAR filing, company filing search, SEC.gov. And again, on the main menu bar, get off. Filings, company filing search. And don't type in the name of the company name. Use the ticker symbol or the CIK. CIK is rather obscure. But you can type in the ticker symbol, CAT, and you will get the company that you want. And you'll see that this is the comprehensive place that all public companies must report. And it has all the different documents. It has some interesting Interesting other things in here. I told you about the 8Ks. Now, notice that 8Ks, you might have noticed this, 8Ks can sometimes come in flurries. 8Ks are notices of non-recurring events. And sometimes you'll just see one 8K pop up, and, well, that's odd. But then other times you'll see more than one, a cluster of them. They might all be related, but you can't include them all in a single 8K. You must report each one as it occurs. And the specifics might be important for a single 8K, whereas there's another 8K that has to do with that, but the specifics are a little different. So the 8Ks are a great place to keep an eye on things that are happening in the company that might actually show up in a 10Q or a 10K later. But as they happen, the 8K is there. Now, this is something kind of useful. The SC13G. SC13G would relate to giving stock to someone. Like, for example, you, sir, have been hired as the CEO of Caterpillar. God, I'm going to short that stock today. No. But part of your deal would be you'd get some stock options. And so as you exercise them, that's free stock to you, or it's stock that is of low cost to you. And so that has to be reported because, you see, you, madam, are an owner of Caterpillar stock. You bought it. How much is that? What was Caterpillar? It was, maybe you could afford a few shares like me, but the bottom line is you bought it, you paid for it, you have are an owner of record of a percentage of that company. It's probably a tiny percentage, but when this hoe handle right here gets it, he's getting it as a benefit, beneficial ownership. So what that does is that waters down your position as an owner. That waters down everyone else's position when he gets freebie stock or low price stock. So we want to notify shareholders. We have a specific form, the SC13G, and that's a slash A. So that was an amendment to an original 13G that was filed earlier. There's an oddball right there. See that S3ASR? That's an oddball. You don't see that one as often. That one is... You see, when you sell common stock as a company, you, madam, are the big dog of Big Dog Incorporated, a public company listed on the New York Stock Exchange, BDI, Big Dog Incorporated. See how creative you guys are? Okay, Big Dog Company has sold, say, a million shares of stock once, then another 5 million, then 3 million shares, expanded to raise equity capital for the company. That would be ownership capital. You're bringing in new owners by having them pay money. Now, oddly enough, some companies do it that way, but if you're a huge company and you want a continuing source of capital, you might actually register a giant pile of stock all at once, but you don't sell it all at once, which would be normal. You do what's called a shelf registration so that you can pull it off the shelf and just sell it without going through the song and dance of filing the forms for the SEC for a new public offering. You say, all right, over the next 5 years, we're going to sell 20 million shares. But at any given time, you might pull 5 million off the shelf to sell, but you've got all 20 of them registered at once. So that's what that S3ASR would be about. And then you see this 10Q here. That's a quarterly. That's one of our children that we are interested in finance and in other subjects as well. I want to make a point here, too, and I can't remember. It's been more than a week ago. But when you're going out for job interviews or internship interviews, career, these are not bad to read. I would bet you that very few other interviewees would have gone through the Q's and K's. You don't go through way past ones. You go to the most current ones. Read them. You'll have knowledge that you can show in the interview. Now, you obviously don't say something, well, I just looked at your latest 10Q and you suck. You don't do that, but you do look carefully at them and you can ask some intelligent questions. Look at the cues, because I guarantee you no one else is going to, or very few others. Look at all these 8Ks. See, right off the bat, I'm curious, just curious, what the heck are all of these? I know I'm going to be sorry I did this. I said document, fool. Now, the top one's going to be the actual form itself. The others are like exhibits, graphs, charts, pictures, things like that, tables. But this is the actual paper, what the paper would have looked like. Yeah, I could have seen in my time putting a little doily symbol or something like that on an 8K. They would have hauled me off. Okay, very quick. Issued a press... Press release. Remember what I told you? If you do a press release, you have to do an 8K. So someone's making a bit of bucks because they're pouring these press releases. My suspicion is that those are all press releases, or most of them are press releases, which is kind of suspicious to me, because if you're doing press releases over and over again, that tells me that you're trying to get bragging, you're trying to stir up interest that wouldn't be there otherwise. A Q. Yeah, there's some 11Ks. Those are stock purchase ESOPs. Whoa, look at all those. And an A. The heck is this? Really? Those are proxy statements. Okay, I may be very sorry now that I went to Caterpillar. Here's the 8K, okay. Finally, they certainly have been giving out a lot of freebie stock. You know, that's okay in a way, but then the other thing is, how many new people have they hired and gotten to go jump on board by giving them stock? That's a little, now understand. Madam, you're in your early 20s, is that correct? Okay. Yeah. Okay, you're not a cynical old bastard yet. You will be. Okay? I'll do my part to try to get you on that road. When I see things, the first thing I ask is not, oh, how great is this? I ask, okay, how bad is this? And when I see so many 8Ks, I get suspicious. When I see so many SC13Gs, I get suspicious. I just ask myself, why is all of this going on? Caterpillar has definitely had some serious problems. Is this evidence? Are they actually unintentionally signaling that they're still having issues? But that's just me. Okay, the interactive. This is where we get the financial statements. And we can drop down on the financial statements to pull them up one by one. But of course, we can also just click on the view the Excel document. You download all of the financial statements, all of the background. You get your income statement, your balance sheet, statement of cash flows, notes to the financial statements, statement of retained earnings, and just tons of documents. It's all there, all public companies. So if you invest, and you're one of those people, I invest and I just throw a dart, well, you can do that, and eventually you will become P.O. Doing that, because you had all this information and you chose not to pay attention. You looked straight ahead on that road at what you wanted, and you didn't notice that there were a whole lot of things happening around you, like the T-Rex coming down to eat you. It's all right here. Now, as I said, and this is the first caution to do, we used to have very strict names for each financial statement. We had very strict rules for what we called each line in each financial statement. And those have kind of vanished over the years, those rules. So we've got the consolidated results of operations. Well, that must be the income statement. Otherwise, sometimes it used to be called the P&L or the profit and loss statement. But it has different names. You just kind of have to take a good stab at what it is these days. Now, Interestingly, here, I showed you Netflix last week. Netflix didn't report the cost of goods sold. Interestingly enough, now there's still a line missing in here, which would be their revenues minus their cost of goods sold, which is called the gross income. So you've got a line missing here, and I would probably need to put that one in because next week, on Wednesday, we're going to be doing ratio analysis, and one of the ratios we actually get excited about is gross income. In other words, revenue minus cost of goods sold. So anyway, I'm just introducing you to each of these. In the homework, I ask you some questions about the different lines. Go to the SEC's documents, find this line, find that line. So it's just essentially, it becomes part of your routine as a business person. Whether or not you are in finance, a lot of this information is kind of interesting to you. So for example, if I were to look at this, I'll do it with another company here. This is, okay. Now, you've got your gross profit. Gross income. That would be your revenues minus your cost of goods sold. A service company doesn't have a cost of goods sold, so you wouldn't have a COGS line, so you wouldn't have a gross margin line. Because a service company does not buy wholesale to do retail. Okay, so in other words, you sell tractors. So when you buy a tractor, then that would be a cost of goods sold. What you sell it for is the revenue. So you sell it for $50,000. You bought it for $30,000. So your gross income off that tractor would be $20,000. You, sir, run a... I'm not going to do it. You run a... I'm trying to think of what I could have you run. I was going to say a male escort service, but that's not going to work. Now I got that one stuck in my mind. Anyway, some kind of service business. You don't buy wholesale. Everything you do is a service that comes from you. That actually works, the male. But you see, in a case like that, so service companies don't have that line in there. But industrial manufacturing production companies, I have a cost of goods sold line, even interestingly as an artist, because I sell, but I also have to buy the all of the materials to create the work, the frame, the dry mounting, the museum glass, and all that kind of stuff, the mats. So I have oddly enough, it doesn't really, certain kinds of industries you might not think of as having a cost of goods sold do. Okay, now, past that, there's something also interesting in here. Selling, general, and administrative expenses, SG&A. That is, fortunately, if you go into the Excel document or you go into the 10K itself, you'll find out the breakdown of this SG&A. That's simply, the SG&A's got lots of things. Your advertising expenses, your salaries, your wages, they just throw it all together in a one comprehensive line here. And you have to dig deeper if you want to see, all right, how much do they spend on marketing this year? How much do they spend on executive compensation? How much do they spend on their employees? How much do they spend on other things? So this is kind of like a big clump that has some internals to it. Research and development expenses, R&D. That is suspicious because that could be a lie. There are two entries that are highly suspicious to financial analysis. One of them is definitely, you just throw it out. Depreciation. And the other one is amortization. These are not actually costs. We would have to add those back in to get to what we care about in finance, which is cash flow. That one, research and development expenses, is suspicious to me. That might be amortization. I will have to dig down into another part of the financial statements, the sources and uses of cash, the statement of cash flows. This, I need to kick that out, and they aren't showing it. I know for a fact that it's hidden in here, somewhere in these lines, somewhere in here, that depreciation is hiding. It's there. It has to be. And I have to find out what it is and get it out of my analysis. Here's the deal. Depreciation, and I've brought this one up before, my company. Last year I spent $4,500 just on a piece of equipment, a camera, a very high-end expensive camera. I'm not allowed to write $4,500 on my financial statements. I can't write it. I'm not allowed to. I have to break that cost up into a period of years and take a bit of it. In a simplified way, okay, I'm allowed for 5 years, I take $4,500 divided by five, that would be straight line, and I get to put in $900 a year. That's what the line depreciation would say. I never wrote a check to depreciation. I'll look at my checkbook again, but I know very well, I never spent $900. It's nowhere in the real life of a company. They spend a large amount of money, but then they're not allowed to put that on their financial statements. They have to break it up into a period of years according to accounting rules. Like, for example, extraordinarily expensive giant buildings. I can't put that on my financial statements. I have to put 20 pieces over 20 years. Other things, computers. In a lot of cases, that was a very expensive computer. I'm not allowed to say, here's an expensive computer. Here's what I pay for. You're not allowed to do that. You have to break it up over 3 years. All of these different things that actually bled my company dry, whatever my company is, not allowed to put them there. I have to put in depreciation, a piece of it, every year for a period of years. And unfortunately, you can't see it here. I'm going to have to go to another financial statement to find out what it is. It's in there. I know darn well it is, but I don't see it. Amortization is the same thing except for it is for intellectual things. For example, my companies, I got a trademark. The cost of that, I have to amortize. Cost of doing that, cost of that expense. So in other words, the financial statements, right off the bat, they are not telling me the truth. They are telling me a rule-based version of it. But it's going to miss the mark. And you'll, on Wednesday, I will actually show you a cash flow analysis. And I'll get into that here in a minute. But it's in there somewhere. And okay, I'm going to beat this down to the these are operating costs. And I get down here to the operating profit. There are two other terms that you might see for that. Operating profit could be called, well, there's three. Operating profit could be called operating income. It could also be called earnings before interest and taxes. Or some variation on that. Or it could be called EBIT. You don't know which it is until you look at the... It was in the fall. I pulled up some kind of... I can't remember what it was. I could not find operating income. I couldn't find earnings before interest and taxes. I couldn't find EBIT. And I found it, and it was actually some twisted rearrangement of the words of earnings before interest and taxes. It drives you crazy. So anyway, that's operating profit. Operating income, EBIT, earnings before interest and taxes. They all mean the same thing. And there it is. We used to have rules. You had to say it this way. You had to put these words. Now they don't have that rule. Okay, there you go. There's your interest expense. Now, one thing that you might want to all, one of the ratios, and I'm going to sneak in some quick ratios, rather some ratios for you to have a look at. Here's one for Caterpillar. Is that a scientific? Yeah, that's a scientific. I'm going to grab, okay. Operating income. Where the hell? Really? Okay, there it is. Okay. $4,406,000,000. That's how much survived wholesale costs and the costs of running the company. Okay? So I'm at the operating line where all I have left is to pay the interest on my debt and to pay Uncle Sam his taxes. So now what I'm going to do is I'm going to look here. Okay, operating profit, 4406. And I'm going to divide that by 531, how much they paid in interest. This ratio is called times interest earned. It's how many times over the money the company has available to pay its interest, in this case, $4.4 billion. It can cover its interest, in this case, $531 million. So Caterpillar can pay its interest that it owes about 8.3 times over. It's covered 8.3 times. Now, back to you. Why am I interested in how easy it is for a company to pay its interest? You got a clue, ma'am? Okay. What happens if a company doesn't make its interest payments on its debt? Do you know? It's gone. It's done. It is over. You don't pay your interest, you are in default. That's the end of the company. Because the bondholders have the prior claim, if you don't pay them, they can't. They will. It's not they can't. They will shoot your dog, sell your Bible on Craigslist, and make your parents do funny dances for them. Okay? That's how bad it is. We really, really care. In other words, if times interest earned goes below one, the company, that's right there, the company's dead. The closer it is to one, the scarier it gets. Because once you get down there around 1.5, 1.3, any kind of blip or drop in sales, that means you're done. You can start getting really concerned at low times interest earned ratios. Here, 8.3, they can cover over eight times. They can pay their interest eight times over. Okay, that's great. So the higher times interest earned, the better. Is there any reason why what I just said is false? Can you think of anything?
I'm not sure.
Okay, here's the deal. You see, I'll show you, and I may have to do this on Wednesday. A company, the less debt a company has, the safer the company is, because it's less likely that it will default on its debt. The less you owe other people, the less they can kick your ass. Unfortunately, the downside is that debt is the engine of growth. It is what causes the ownership position to grow rapidly in profit. It's called the gains to leverage. The more I use debt, the harder the growth, the faster, the stronger the growth in equities return. This takes us to a very important point, and I emphasize, I found myself really hitting that point in the derivatives course I teach. Madam, have you ever heard of OPM? It's one of the most important concepts in business, OPM. And I'm shocked that you haven't heard what OPM is. It is so important, sir, that you might even want to consider getting it as a tat. Tasteful. I mean, none of that gaudy, you know, color with the doily. Really, you know. OPM, do you know what it is? It actually surprised me. You're juniors in business and they haven't taught you. OPM is other people's money. Sounds funny? It's real. You don't expose your own money. You expose other people's money. That's how you grow fast in business. And the great part is, if you screw up, you just default and go on to the next deal and leave the investors screwed. That's how it works. It's not a joke. It's real. It is the way it's done. So in other words, when I see a company that's got a times interest earned of 20, 30, 40, I actually consider that to be a weak company. It's not realizing any gains that you could get by leveraging off the OPM. It's just the way it is. In this case, Caterpillar's, I mean, different industries have different normal ratios, typical ratios. And Caterpillar is actually in a kind of a nice, sweet, safe zone as far as its times interest earned is concerned. It's not too low, and it's not really too high. So this gives us a good pointer, and you'll see me do other ratios on Wednesday, and each of them has a little story to tell. It's not that any given one of them is going to tell me everything I need to know. It's just that they create a composite picture, a tapestry, if you will, of a company's life. Take this out of here now. Then we pay the taxes. Okay, you've got, after you've paid your interest, you get, and you've got some other income that might come in, like you've got some investments that'll bring in some money, or other income, your mom sends you some. Dear Caterpillar, here's some money to get you through the month. And then you get to your EBT, earnings before taxes line, okay? Consolidated profit before taxes, EBT, earnings before taxes. Again, so many different words. Now, the provision for income taxes. This is another one that's a little suspect because this isn't actually what they paid in taxes. It's what they have set aside to pay in taxes. You'll see these websites oftentimes, and I understand, I attack liberals and conservatives. I don't care. I'm going to die someday, so I don't care who likes me. In this case, liberals just start peeing all over themselves. They didn't pay hardly any taxes. They were looking at this line right here relative to the line above it. How much they paid, and that really doesn't tell you what they actually paid. It says that Caterpillar provided $3.3 billion for taxes. That doesn't mean that's what they paid, that's what they provided. And then you'll see, well, they paid, you know, a very low amount, or they paid a very high amount. Okay, let me see something. Profit before taxes. Geez, that's actually a staggering provision. That would tell me that somewhere back along the line, they owed taxes. I'm not sure. I should have looked at this one. Okay, now, there's your profit. Profit is oftentimes called net income. Another term for it is earnings or net earnings. And I caution you because it can be any of these and you have to know that they're all the same word. Now, in this case, now, profit per common share. There are two numbers. A company could have 1 million shares outstanding. That's basic. But we might have that guy right there has got 100,000 options that could turn into common stock. So if I were to add those in, it would be 1.3 million shares outstanding. The 1.3 would be called diluted. So I put that in as a line, okay. What's out there right now? Income, total income divided by the number of shares that are out there right now. That's your basic. Income divided by the number of shares that could be out there, total. That's the diluted. Usually the numbers are fairly close, especially with companies that just have insanely large amounts of stock hanging out there. As you can see, the basic for a Caterpillar per share is $1.27. The fully diluted is $1.26, so that's not a material difference. It can be rather noticeable, though. In this case, this is what that number means. It means that every share a shareholder has, that share has claim to $1.27. Whatever you paid for it, that share has a claim to $1.27 for each share. So if you own 100 shares, you get to claim, I'm the company, you get to claim $127, okay? Now I want you to reach, put your hand out, smack. No, you can't have that. Slap. It's yours, but I might not give it to you. You see, I can do two things with that $1.27 per share of yours. I can give you a dividend, a little bit of it for yourself, you know, go buy some Cheetos and something like that. The soft ones are the ones I like, not those crackly ones, bad teeth and all that. But you see, I don't have to do it. I am in control of your money in a fiduciary way. I have to decide, do I give you any of that? Do I give you a dividend? Okay, well, if I do, how much of a dividend? If I don't, the other thing I can do is put it back into the company on your behalf. If I do that, theoretically, the company grows and your stock price goes up. So if I were to look back here at Yeehaw Finance, or Yahoo Finance, for the love of heaven, I mean, you get to my age, just put yourself in a home. Cat. Okay, dividend. Uh-oh, ruh-roh. Wait, what? Is there a problem? They pay a dividend of $3.44 a share. How much do they make per share? You see a problem there? Oh, let's try this again. They're giving the shareholders $3.44 each share. The company has available to the shareholders $1.27 a share. Is there a problem there? Yeah, they're giving the shareholders more than they're making for the shareholders. Now, that's an issue. Are they? Well, the first thing is, you know, logically, obviously, they're on crack. But why would they be doing something that stupid? Why would they do that? Sir, got any idea? You've been a very wealthy person. You've done better and better every year of your life. Okay, so, you know, when you have a party for your relatives, you just hand them, you know, the gifts, the presents every year. It's
make it look like you're doing better than you are.
Well, spank me, yes. Exactly. There's actually a rule in dividends, and I might have mentioned it already. When I was a consultant, you'd have the shareholders just bitch and bitch at you if you didn't pay a dividend. And there was a time when companies would finally, we'd have this talk, okay, is it time for us to start paying a dividend? And that's when you have to get serious with them and say, let's talk about a dividend. Because once you start giving a dividend, you're pretty much stuck with it. If you stop paying it or you suddenly drop the dividend, the market is going to spank you hard. Because you didn't live up to an expectation on which future expected cash flows to the investors were based. So they're going to punish you for that. And it's even worse than that. Because the way we look at it in financial analysis, the investment people, we say it's not just whether you pay a dividend or not, it's are you growing that dividend every year? That shows us that you're strong, that you not only can pay a dividend, but that you once you start paying a dividend, you're not going to just leave it flat. It's going to grow to take account of inflation and also to show that you are better and better able to pay a dividend every year. So once you start paying that dividend, you're stuck paying it. What does that mean for you, madam? Don't give gifts. And if you do give gifts, go to Dollar Tree. It's great. $10, 10 gifts at Christmas. Okay, so, yeah. This is not a good sign. But wait a second. They're profitable. Isn't that wonderful? Caterpillar is a profitable company. And yet a profitable company can be profitable for years until it closes its doors and the company is dead. Because profit means nothing to the survival of a company. What matters is cash flow. In other words, there are all of these things in a financial statement that are not real, so we have to take out those costs, but there are all of these things in a financial statement that are real that we have to put back in. So let's go over here. Here's one of the important ones that we want to look at. I'm looking, for heaven's sakes, where's the balance sheet? Which one of these stupid things is the balance sheet? Well, that's troubling. Oh, good, good, good. Okay, so let's look at things that happened. They gathered almost $1 billion in cash came in. Well, that's certainly going to help things. Heck, I look at my mailbox every day. Oh, thank God, $1 billion came in. Here's cash. Yeah, you're going to feel a lot better. It's healthy. I found out that when you're in the service and you get shot, a shot of atropine, a shot of adrenaline, you feel great. Oh, I'll leave my leg behind there. That's for you military people out there. Okay, so, but where in the heck did that money come from? Okay, let's look down here. They actually used up cash, and this is where I'm sneaking things in so you can understand them. They taught you this in accounting, but, okay. Madam, are you majoring in accounting? Okay, you've taken the accounting course, 131, 132, okay? Were you on the edge of your seat every day just like, damn, keep talking, boy. I want to hear more of this. Debit, yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. Give me that debit, yeah. You were sitting there. Uh-huh, yeah. Make that credit work, uh-huh. You lie if you say that you did. The bottom line is that they showed you things that, you know, those were those things that you have this little delete button. Delete that MF right now when it's over. And that's okay, but now they come back to us. Things like the changes in assets and liabilities, changes in current assets. When a current asset goes up from one year to the next, that's actually a bleed on your cash flow. Think about it this way. In my company, I have been building inventory year over year. That inventory might, a given work of art, might not even sell in my lifetime. Hell, the way sales are, I'll have to cut off my ear and die to get anything sold. But so what happens, though, is that I spent money. Last year, it was a slow year. It was about $2,800. $1,000. Now, that was real money out of my pocket. I paid that to the framers and to the companies that supply the glass and all that kind of stuff. I paid money, real money out of my pocket. But I was not allowed to write that as an expense. It's not on my it's not on my income statement. It shows up on my stupid balance sheet as an increase in value of inventory. So if I am going to look at the real cash flow of a company, I would look and say, all right, Caterpillar spent, what, $1.4 billion. You see it went from 8.6 to 10.0 inventory. That was real money, but it didn't show up as expense on the income statement. It showed up as an expansion of the inventory. So in other words, increases in assets are actually drains on cash flows. Increases in assets actually show that money was spent that you wouldn't see if you didn't look at the balance sheet. So when assets go up, especially current assets, that means cash flow went down. The same is true for other things. If you see those receivables, they went from about $6 billion to $7.5 billion. That's revenue. It shows up as revenue, but they didn't get that money. That's increase of, well, it's about $1.5 billion is money that looks on, that's on revenue. They have not gotten that money. Which would you rather have, sir? I pay you or I say I owe you? Yeah, you think? Yeah. That's how what it boils down to, you know. And so another, and the same is true in my company. I had probably about, well, I got aggressive. I started using PayPal's credit for some of my customers to buy. And so I had about $1,200 in revenue that was, I extended as credit. They liked it. Okay, I'm going to make a deal with you. You sign this paper, you can take it home today, and you owe me the money. Wonderful. I show that in one case there was a $600 work of art. Okay. I got $600 revenue for that day. It's on my taxes that I have to pay. I have to pay sales tax on that. Oh, the whole nine yards. I didn't have that money. And yet there it was. So you have to look at those current assets to see, are they going up? You add them all up, and then that's what's called your change in working capital. Okay, so now the opposite happens with current liabilities. If I see how my payables went up by about $1.8 billion, you see how the payables, accounts payable, went up from, what is it, 4.6 to 6.5 billion? That is money that I said I paid. It's an expense. It's in the selling, general, and administrative expenses. And yet I didn't pay it. So that actually helps my cash flow. It improves my cash flow. See, I can pay you. Okay, you're a businessman. I did some work for you, okay? You paid me. It's that escort business, you know. Okay, so now you owe me. You owe me big. This company would be nothing without me. You owe me $2,000. Now, would you rather say you owe me, or would you rather pay me? That's right. So in other words, when accounts payable goes up, that's a good thing because you're saving cash. You're controlling your cash flow that way. You pay bills as late as you can, okay? And you take your money in as fast as you can, okay? You take money in as fast as you can. You pay your bills as late as you can. That is cash management. Every company does it. Every company that's worth its salt. I told you the story that this one company right here in town, it's rather big, quiet company. They got in this big pile, a couple of million dollars, I guess. And one of the big dogs in the treasury of the company found out that these other departments were saying, oh, thank God I can pay these bills. And she just had an absolute cow. You don't pay those bills. They were due. We can use that money. We get to have that money. Caterpillar said when they, a couple of their former students here at ISU, I invited them to speak to my club at a dinner engagement we had, you know, ISU alum come and talk to the kids who are about to graduate and all that, tell them all about what it's like out there in the real world. And this one of them, who is in Treasury at CAT, said, we spent all these years obsessed with profit, profit, profit. And finally, the new generation, she was referring to herself and the ones who had been taught by people like me and others, we finally explained to them the reason we're dying is because that profit means nothing. It's cash flow. Caterpillar finally got the message, and you can see here. Do you see how they're trying to control their cash flow? They're trying to get it so that they are emphasizing, focusing on cash rather than on an accounting number called profit. Damn, when your current liabilities, your accounts payable jumps by $1.5 billion, yeah, you're not paying bills. That's controlling cash flow. That's retaining cash. Okay, going down here. Long-term debt. Interesting. This is an interesting thing. Their debt has not changed too much. You see, if this long-term debt jumps, that is money coming in from lenders. So the other place, there's one other place money can come in, long-term money. That would be stock, selling stock. I would see this guy go up quite a bit. Obviously, they sold some stock. You see that from there to there? They did sell some stock, new stock of the company. But that is not enough for that to jump by over $1 billion. Their cash position strengthened by over $1 billion. My sense is that this jump in cash is purely cash management control. Controlling how fast they pay their bills. Although that inventory did go up, that's kind of nasty. And the receivables jumped as well. It's still, my suspicion is that most of this was, boy, that's hard to call. I'd have to put that together. Anyway, let me go down here. Okay, I'm looking for statement of cash flows. Okay, here we go. Come down here, and there's depreciation and amortization. $2.877 billion. I have to add that back. That's showing up as a cost in their financial statements. It ain't any cost. It's not a real cost. So I would have to take their income statement and add that amount back in because it was not real cash outflow. It was just a number. Well, where is real cash outflow? It's down here. This is where the real cash flow happened. I'm looking for anything else that's an equipment purchase. Usually we look for heavy equipment purchases. Financial products, wow. There we go. These things right here, look, see these? That's real cash. That's what really happened. Depreciation and amortization was just a piece of the total amount of money that went out of the company. So I add the phony piece back in to the profit and take out the real thing, the real capital expenditures. That gets me closer to my net working capital. That gets me closer to real cash flow. So I add back that line that says depreciation and amortization. I add that back to the profit because depreciation and amortization never happen. Then I take out those real heavy costs that they actually paid money. Okay? That's what I have to do to get the to cash flow. Where the heck am I looking? There's something else. Oh, distinction. I said it once, and I just kind of glossed over. There are two kinds of funds. When I say money, I'm referring to short-term funds. Your revenue makes you money. When I use the word capital, I'm referring to long-term funds. So when I say capital expenditures, I am talking about expenditures that are going to last a long time, the big, huge expenses. Things that money can't buy, you have to finance them. When I talk about capital financing, what I am talking about is borrowing long-term or selling stock in the company. Those are the sources of capital, selling stock and selling bonds. The uses of it are your capital expenditures. The source of my short-term funds is pretty much my revenue, There's also banks have what are called working capital management plans. This has been one of the big, rolling, important things that has driven consumer sales growth for decades and decades. In fact, even into the 1700s and the 1800s. Here's how it works. This is money. Most businesses have most of the money for the company come in 2 or 3 months a year. It's pretty much the reality. Do you know what those are, those 2 or 3 months a year are? That's Christmas. October, November, and December, right? Yes, exactly, yeah, exactly. But I have expenses the whole year long. Now, other businesses, interestingly enough, they also have cycles within a year. For example, in my business, my revenues come in a short time span from May until September, late September. I don't have hard, I have very few sales during the Christmas season. My cycle is different. Companies that sell boats, they have just a short period in the winter, late winter, into the spring, and some into the summer, and then they're done. So what we do is we work with banks. I say, okay, bank, I'm going to need a line of credit so that I can pay my employees, pay my bills during the slow sales months. And then once the sales start picking up at my time of the year, I start paying that back off. I pay it back down to you. That's called working capital management. And banks have forever done this. In other words, if you run a furniture store, you sell furniture, okay? Now what you do is you go to the bank and they provide the money so that you can put all of this furniture on the floor of your store. And then as you sell that furniture, you pay them off for that. That's how it works. And it's we wouldn't survive without this. That is money management. That's not capital management. That's money management. Because this is over a short cycle that this occurs within a year. So money is within a year. Capital is more than a year, generally as a rule. Your revenues are your first source of money. We call that internally generated equity. No company can survive forever unless it sustains itself by internally generated equity. Money you get from borrowing, money you get from selling stock, that's externally generated. Now, if it's money that you get from selling stock, it's called externally generated equity. You're bringing in new owners. And then you have your lenders. That's debt. You're borrowing. That's always external. Interestingly, if any of you have ever seen European financial statements, they don't use the word equity, which means ownership. They use the term internal liabilities versus external liabilities. In other words, they see the owners as an internal liability, as opposed to the lenders, who are an external liability. But they're all liabilities, and it's a correct, it's a way of thinking about it. It's an honest way of thinking about it. We're going to do Caterpillar's cash flow. There's one other piece of cash flow that's important that I'll show you real quick. Net working capital, NWC, is your current assets minus your current liabilities. Okay, so 2017, 2016, current assets, current liabilities for Caterpillar. Well, I'm on the cash flow statement. I need to get back to the balance sheet real quick here. Did I get the balance sheet? No, I didn't. You know what? 36,244. Is that a 6? 36,244 for the 36,244 2016. Yeah, 2016 would be, where is it? 31,967. Current liabilities, cranking it down here. Wait, is there some reason I can't see the current liabilities? Oh, there it is. No. I see it. I got it. You don't need to help me. 26,931. Shut up. Okay, and then 26,132. So the net working capital for the 2 years is... Well, let me pull up a calculator here real quick, see if I can do this real fast. 36,244 less 26,931, 26,931. That buys me 9,313, net working capital 2017, 9,313, and 31,967, 31,967 less 26,132, 5,835. Now, what we care about for cash flow, we get those two numbers, net working capital, and then we find the difference. The delta NWC is net working capital current period minus net working capital one period back. So I take 9,313 less 5,835, 3,478. That is the change in net working capital. That's not good. That means that their net working capital increased by $3.5 billion. That means that that's a drain on cash flow. Their cash flow lost that much ground in a single friggin' year. That is what that means. So, I mean, you put that in with the rest of them, that begins to get scary, because here's the final thing. Cash flow. And I'll do this in a more comprehensive way. Is your net income, and I'll break this down because I've got to get in. I have to add back the depreciation and amortization because that wasn't real. But then I subtract what was real, the capital expenditures. And then I subtract the change in net working capital. Net income is money coming in. Then I add back the phony expense that didn't really happen. Then I take out the not-dead expenses that did happen. And then I take out what was hidden that snuck in as cash movement. If you think about this, you're going to see the Caterpillar profitable company. We're going to see in the next one when I actually do the numbers for Caterpillar. I will bet you that that is a bleeding cash flow company. That's all I have for you. I thank you.